and alcohol for himself, and a healthy dose of supreme confidence in his own abilities. After all, he'd been a doctor before, not to mention a psychologist, and a professor, and a monk, many monks in fact, and the founder of a religious college. Why couldn't he be a surgeon? As Damara performed his medical miracles on the high seas, makeshift operating table tied down to protect the patients from the roll of the waves, a zealous young press officer wandered the decks in search of a story. The Home Office was getting on his back. They needed good copy. He needed good copy. Little of note had been happening for weeks. He was, he joked to his shipmates, practically starving for news. When word of the Korean rescue spread among the crew, it was all he could do to hide his excitement. Dr. Sears' story was fantastic. It was indeed perfect. Sear hadn't been required to help the enemy, but his honorable nature had compelled him to do so. And with what results? 19 surgeries, and 19 men departing the Cayuga in far better shape than they'd arrived. Would the good doctor agree to a profile to commemorate the momentous events of the week? Who was Damara to resist? He had grown so sure of his invulnerability, so confident in the borrowed skin of Joseph Sear, M.D., that no amount of media attention was too much. And he had performed some pretty masterful operations, if he might say so himself. Dispatches about the great feats of Dr. Sear soon spread throughout Canada. Dr. Joseph Sear, original version, felt his patience running out. It was October 23rd, and there he was, sitting quietly in Edmundston, trying his damnedest to read a book in peace. But they simply wouldn't leave him alone. The phone was going crazy, ringing the second he replaced the receiver. Was he the doctor in Korea, the well-intentioned callers wanted to know? Was it his son, another relative? No, he told anyone who bothered to listen. No relation. There were many Sears out there, and many Joseph Sears. It was not he. A few hours later, Sear received another call, this time from a good friend who now read aloud the miracle doctor's credentials. There may be many Joseph Sears, but this particular one boasted a background identical to his own. At some point, coincidence just didn't cut it. Sear asked his friend for a photograph. Surely there was some mistake. He knew precisely who this was. Wait, this is my friend, Brother John Payne of the Brothers of Christian Instruction, he said, the surprise evident in his voice. Brother Payne had been a novice when Sear knew him. He'd taken the name after shedding his secular life. And that life, Sear well recalled, was a medical one much like his own. Dr. Cecil B. Hamon, he believed, the man's original name was. But why, even if he had returned once more to medicine, would he ever use Sear's name instead? Surely his own medical credentials were enough. Damara's deception rapidly began to unravel. And unravel it did, but his eventual dismissal from the Navy was far from signaling the end of his career. Profoundly embarrassed, the future of the nation's defense was on its shoulders, and it couldn't even manage the security of its own personnel. The Navy did not press charges. Damara, alias Sear, was quietly dismissed and asked to leave the country. He was only too happy to oblige, and despite his newfound and short-lived notoriety, he would go on to successfully impersonate an entire panoply of humanity, from prison warden to instructor at a school for mentally retarded children, to humble English teacher, to civil engineer who was almost awarded a contract to build a large bridge in Mexico. By the time he died, over 30 years later, Dr. Sear would be but one of the dozens of aliases that peppered Damara's history. Among them, that of his own biographer, Robert Crichton, an alias he assumed soon after the book's publication, and long before the end of his career as an impostor. Time and time again, Damara, Fred to those who knew him undisguised, found himself in positions of the highest authority, in charge of human minds in the classroom, bodies in the prison system, lives on the decks of the Cayuga. Time and time again, he would be exposed, only to go back and succeed yet again at inveigling those around him. How was he so effective? Was it that he preyed on particularly soft, credulous targets? I'm not sure the Texas prison